Golf Smarter Premium, number 479, published on March 10, 2015.
This episode of Golf Smarter is brought to you by Harry's, for guys like you who want a great shave experience for a fraction of what you're paying now. Go to harrys.com and get $5 off your first purchase by entering the code GOLFSMARTER when you check out.
Your 27-point plan for better shot making with fitness expert Roger Fredericks.
This is Golf Smarter Premium. Here's your host, Fred Green.
Welcome to the Golf Smarter podcast, Roger.
Hey, Fred, how you doing? It's been many moons. It's good to talk to you again.
It is great to talk to you again. We met years ago doing a piece for the Golf Channel with Catherine Roberts.
Correct.
Swing flaws and what was that? Swing?
I think it was an eight-part series Catherine and I did on the Golf Channel. It was called Swing Fault Solutions.
Yes, it was. And I was the guinea pig on one of them.
You were the star of one of our episodes.
No. I was the guinea pig. You were the star. It was a lot of fun, though. And it was great to meet you. You've got a phenomenal history with the people that you've worked with. I want to, you know, establish who you are, what you do, who you've helped, and then we'll get into how you can help us.
Okay.
So, are you a PGA certified golf instructor?
Yes, I am.
Okay. But you are now. What came first, the fitness flexibility part or the PGA teaching pro?
What happened was, I'll make this real quick. I had a pro golf career cut short a long time ago, back in 1972. And I shattered a real complicated bone in my wrist. And I consequently ended up having two surgeries on that, very, very serious surgeries, where they took bone graft, took a bone out of my hip and transplanted that in my wrist. That didn't work. Then they put a prosthetic in there, which is still in there today. And over the next maybe 8 years, you know, I end up with even more problems. I had two knee surgeries on my left knee, which is not uncommon. If you look at most golf injuries, most of them and the surgeries are on the left side for right-handers, because the less stable, you know, side usually takes the brunt of it and finally wears out. But anyway, I went through that and finally got out of the golf business. But I had a guy look at me. And by the way, I went to countless, and I mean countless, orthopedic surgeons, physical trainers, Rolfus, herbologists, health practitioners, mainly for my knee, and nothing worked. And one day, a guy looked at me, who was a guy named Rick McDonald. He was the head trainer for the San Diego Chargers, and I never told him anything about myself. And he looked at me, and he just watched my gait, and he said, "Hey, you must have one heck of a sore left ankle when you hit a lot of golf balls." And my ankle would swell up, and my knee was history. They want to have another surgery on my knee. But anyway, and I said, "How do you know that?" And he diagnosed my posture to me. And he said, "Your posture is horrible."
Wow.
At the time, I was 33 years old. And he diagnosed my posture. And then he got me completely out of pain. And guess what? My golf game, which had been at one time pro tour material, then I got injured. And then it went up to about an 8 handicap. It was 50-50 whether I'd break 80 or not. Yeah. Then I got my body back in shape, and I started playing great golf again. And soon after, I set two course records in San Diego. And I think, wait a minute, you know, I used to be young and, you know, in good shape and played really good golf. Then I got myself into real horrible shape, you know, surgeries and all that, and I played bad golf. Then I get myself back into good shape, and I played great golf again. I've been playing decent ever since. It's like, hey. Eventually, I got into it. I made my career out of it. And right around that time, a lot of research was coming out on the biomechanics and the physiology of the golf swing. And we learned that good golf demands it. It has to have ample flexibility, especially in the upper trunk. And anyway, so I got into that movement, got myself really flexible, and then started my own golf schools. And I used to put in, besides the normal half-day, one-day schools, private lessons, beginner schools, and all that, I put in golf fitness schools. And we're back in 1988, and I couldn't pay people to take them. But eventually I learned the right way, I think, to market it and sell it, and I've been doing that ever since. So one thing led to another, and I started working with a bunch of tour players, mainly the senior tour guys. And you know, Arnold Palmer came across. A lot of people referred Arnold to me. And so I got together with him, and then, you know, he bought into it, and we really helped him a lot. And he and I, he funded an infomercial for me, which went on the air, him, me, and Gary Player, Donna Capone. And it was called Roger Fredericks Reveals the Secrets to Golf Swing Flexibility. And the rest is kind of history. So I've been, you know, I've been mainly, to answer your question in my long-winded fashion, the golf plane and instruction came first. Then I learned that the golf swing is a demanding athletic endeavor. And then I've, you know, taken off from there. So that's kind of the story of my life in 25 words or less.
With an asterisk. It's amazing that you have helped define for everybody, is golf a sport? I guess when it comes to injuries, yeah, it's a sport, right? There's so many people who just be, oh, you're not, it's not, just because it has a ball doesn't mean it's a sport.
Well, yeah, I mean, we're pro golfers, and just about all good golfers are really great athletes in that we all have super, tremendous strong legs. Why? Because we all started the game when we were kids. And think about it, a round of golf is about a 5 to 7 mile walk. And we're walking 18, 27, 36 holes a day since we're little kids. You know, plus we're in a semi-squat position doing a semi-lunge. We're walking on average around maybe 10 to 14 miles a day, bending over and all that. So we do this, you know, day after week, after month, after year, after decade. We end up with incredible leg strength without even knowing it. Hmm. And then we're doing this gymnastic, you know, rotation of the spine. We end up with, we're doing that millions, literally, of times. We end up with superb upper body flexibility, almost gymnastic, you know. Hmm. So we have the super strong legs to stabilize our body and provide the power and support. We have an incredible upper body flexibility. So, you know, yeah, I mean, it is a sport. And you look at so many great athletes that turn to golf, and, you know, what do they have? They have super strong leg strength for, you know, running around in their individual sport. They have great upper body flexibility. And most good athletes, you know, don't have that hard of a time playing good golf. And then you have the other side of the coin where you have the average person who grew up with a real job, you know, and, you know, they go to work every day and they're sitting down. They don't have the leg strength. They don't have the upper body flexibility because they're forward, rounded shoulders, all that. And they come out and they really have a hard time of playing golf. So, yeah, the golf swing is a very demanding athletic endeavor. Hmm. It doesn't look like it because we're not jumping and sprinting and, you know, doing a lot of burst speed type of stuff and all that. But it's you have to have pretty good function in your body to play this game. That's for sure.
Yeah, you're not doing any of those activities, but you are wringing your body like it's a wet rag and you're trying to get all the water out. You're just twisting it and doing things to it. You mentioned needing to have strong legs. You were saying that pro and good golfers have great strong legs, but you also just talked about having terrible posture and that ruined your golf. So now we've got both halves of the body that are working against us as amateur golfers.
Absolutely. And even though over all these years, you know, I've gotten a reputation as the golf flexibility guy, Catherine and I always kid ourselves because a lot of people call us the king and queen of golf yoga. But,
yeah, but Catherine Roberts will fight you on that one, but that's good. Right.
But yeah, but like you're saying, I mean, but the truth of the matter is, yes, the good golf swing demands flexibility, and I've gone that route. The whole thing is, my whole thing is really been to get people back into proper posture, and I am 100% convinced, and you can hold me to this right now on your show, posture will be and is becoming the next big movement in health and fitness. Years ago, we've seen jogging, we've seen aerobics, we've seen Pilates and yoga. Last 10 years, it's been core. I guarantee you, posture is the next big thing. It is without question, in my experience, the most neglected and misunderstood aspect of health and fitness, and in the golf swing too. Mm. The body has one design for all of us. We're all created equal. We have the same amount of muscles and joints and the same design. And the giant design is simply this is on my website, but the design is simply to have the ear over the shoulder, over the hip, over the knee, over the ankle. And you look at little kids. When we're done with this show, I want everybody to go out and look at little children, especially up until maybe 5 or 7 years old. They're perfect little machines. Their feet are straight ahead. Their heads sit right on top of their clavicles. And you can drop them, throw them, kick them. They don't break. What happens, though?
You can't do that anymore.
our hunters and gatherers, we don't do that anymore. We sit down at cars and desks and computers and do Golf Smarter radio shows sitting down. And we end up out of proper posture. And we see rounded shoulders, forward head, especially the most common one. You know right off the bat, you don't need to be a rocket scientist to figure this out. When you see a person with rounded shoulder, forward head, all that means is, in layman's terms, the muscles on the front side of their body have shortened. It's tightened, and it's pulled the person forward. And then the back muscles restrict too. So when that person comes out to play golf, they try to make a shoulder turn, no comprende, they can't do it. Because the muscles just will not expand. And then they end up compensating, and then that usually creates compensations for compensations, and then it's we're in trouble. But again, I'm now I'm going more into the posture reconstruction restoration programs to really get people not only flexible but get their bodies back into proper design so they can function better not only in the golf swing but in their life.
Well, I would love to be able to make a living out of working out on my golf game, but I know of all the professional golf people that I speak to, none of them get to play golf anymore. They're all too busy. But I'm a desk jockey. I've been a desk jockey for most of my 30-plus year career. So I'm sitting most of the day. Now I'm sitting in front of computer screens and I found that chairs and sitting at a desk has been the worst thing for my back of everything that's bad about my posture and my lifestyle and as far as how I hold myself. I've learned how to sleep differently, which has helped my back. But so many people use like one of those inflated balls, the big rubber balls, to use as chairs.
Right.
And I have found a chair that kind of mimics that, but in it, so it does engage my core and it has really helped my back. But I'm fairly certain my posture sucks.
Yeah. Well, what happens when you and I are talking right now and we're sitting down, the most powerful muscles in our body, the upper part of the legs and what's called the hip flexors, iliopsoas in particular, mm-hmm. Our hips now, you and I are actually working out. We're actually exercising because our hip flexor muscles are actually in contraction. Just like if I were to, you can see that, if I'm going to, flex my arm here, my bicep up here in the top part is contracting. And that's what our hips are doing. And we do this, again, all the time for hours a day and for years. Those muscles finally shorten. And when they shorten, they pull the pelvis forward and then what's the pelvis attached to? The spine. And the spine finally starts to wear down. And what you're doing, you're on the right track because the Swiss balls are definitely help. And the best thing, though, are these stand-up desks. And they're becoming more and more popular, and for good reason. You have those desks now that stand up, and you put your computer up there. You don't have to sit down. And almost assuredly, with most people, the back problems will go away.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So is it okay? I've got a physical coming up in a couple of weeks. Is it okay if I tell my doctor that you told me that I'm exercising all day long at my desk?
Sure.
Okay, fine.
Yeah, tell me you're exercising your hips.
Okay.
But you don't know. And one more thing. When we're sitting down, all of our weight, all of our upper body weight is going right down where? On our organs. And the organs are getting squished. Our organs and our pelvis were not designed to bear the weight. Our feet and legs were. And now our organs are getting squished. So when we become all that weight now, plus we get one-sided. Almost everybody, most people in our culture, the world for that matter, is right-handed. So, you overuse one side of the body. Tennis players get tennis elbow. Baseball pitchers blow out the rotator cuffs and Tommy John. The golfer's milieu is a tight right hip for most of us. Then it dominates the left side. But Now we're sitting down, and our pelvis is out of position. And then, you know, eventually our prostate for us guys starts wearing down as we get older. Women, they get real tight in there. And many, many women now are forced to have C-sections because the birth canal gets squished and the seed can't go up the fallopian tubes. And urinary infections, you know, the urine pools in there, it goes on and on and on. And mainly, I love the statement, or don't love it, but I mean, it's accurate in that I know that sitting down is really the new cigarette smoking. It's the new smoking. It's destroying our health. And we're seeing more and more and more hip and knee replacements, back surgeries, carpal tunnel, I mean, shoulder surgeries. That's becoming an epidemic, by the way. And plantar fasciitis, bunions, fallen arches, all because the body's out of its design. And again, it's just we're just not getting the proper motion that we should be getting.
Is running a bad thing? Running is a
wonderful thing if your body is in line. If your hip, knee, and ankle are lined up, and you're walking, you're landing heel, ball, toe, you can run to your heart's content. But most people have, when you see duck feet, when a person has feet that are reverted, the feet and knees tell you what's going on in your hips. And when you see a person who's running duck-footed, the medial, the inside part of the knee now is getting, you know, is getting the brunt of it. It's called joint centration. So, yeah, I mean, you're going to blow out your knees and your hips tighten up and you get back problems and on and on and on and on. So, I mean, I get asked all the time, what do I think of this exercise, this machine, this new exercise workout or whatever? And my standard answer is, are all exercises good? And my answer is, well, pretty much yes. Are all exercises good for all people? No way. And more and more and more people, Fred, are coming to me. You go, Roger, I don't get it. I work out all the time. I take care of myself, and I'm still injured. My back still kills me. My knee's still going out. And again, because their body is out of proper alignment. You see, we're seeing this on the Pro Golf Tour. I mean, the Pro Golf Tour is becoming a MASH unit. And I've written a couple articles and done some interviews recently. It'll be coming out pretty soon. I call it the dark side of the golf fitness movement. And you look at these pros out there, and everybody's in awe of what great shape they are. And they are, most of them. But, you know, how about all the injuries? I mean, Tiger's the poster boy. He's had four knee surgeries, back surgeries, I mean, Achilles problems, shoulder problems. And he's only one of many. And these, think about it. These kids, since they're little children, infants, are hitting golf balls, you know, millions of times. And they get one-sided. Just like I mentioned, the tennis players and baseball pitchers, and they get one-sided, and their right side dominant. And now they go and they get workout because they're trying to keep up with Tiger and, you know, the rest of the guys. And what do? They go out, and some of these guys overdo it, and they work out too strenuously, a lot of them. And as I say, they're putting Ferrari engine on weak internal Volkswagen frames, and you put that kind of stress on there, then pretty soon they're getting injured too. So you got to watch your workouts. Make sure you're doing the right stuff for you.
That is so interesting that for years we've been talking about the Tiger effect on the industry, and now it's coming, you know, it's coming around to where the industry is struggling and courses are closing and people are leaving the game, and they're still blaming Tiger for all this. But the fact that you're bringing up the exercise element, which he changed the business, he changed the golf world by coming out being such a fine physical specimen, and now that he's deteriorating at a young age, it's like, oh wait, we didn't really sit back and watch what's happening before we get in, you know, and try to be exactly like him. And now look at him. Oh wow.
And even though I've been propagating the golf fitness movement since mid 1980s. You know, to me, it's good news, bad news. And the good news is, yeah, more and more people are getting fit. They're increasing their bone density and muscle mass and flexibility, and they feel better and they're more confident and cardio and all that. It's all good. It's wonderful. But the bad news is, you know, like I said, more and more people are getting injured. So, and I hate to be contradictory, but if you look at some of the greatest players, probably almost all of the great players in previous generations, you know, the Hogans and Sneeds and Trevinos and Nicklauses and players, Gary's an exception, but Johnny Miller, I mean, go on and break down the road. None of those guys worked out, mm-hmm. you know, but they got their workouts, they got their function by growing up naturally. They didn't grow up playing Nintendo and Xbox and, you know, sitting in video and all this kind. I mean, I have a teenage son and he comes up every night. Guess where he gets his homework? It's online. Mm-hmm. And they have computers in the classroom. So mm-hmm. we're producing, I believe, the sickest generation, I think, in the history of the industrialized world. I really believe that. And you can see it. And what are we seeing? More and more back surgeries. Like I said a minute ago, I mean, it's really kind of scary, I think.
Very interesting. Would you mind talking for a moment about your relationship and how, where it started and how it evolved with the big three, which is obviously Arnie, Gary, yeah. and Jack?
Well, first it was, you know, my mentor in all this is a guy you probably heard of named Pete Egoscue. And Pete, as far as I'm concerned, is the most knowledgeable person on the planet, you know, as far as physiology and the design of the body and all that. But anyway, I kind of played a pretty big part in Pete's career, and I got him off the road. In the old days, he just did house calls, but bottom line was he came into our clinic and started doing his stuff, and we weren't even open, like, I think 30 days. And Phil Rogers had referred Jack to come see Pete. And, you know, so he came in there, and then it was our second meeting, I believe, their second session, and I'm like in awe.
I'm sorry to be stupid. I've not heard of Pete Egoscue.
Okay, that's all right. You might want to look him up. It's find him at egoscue.com. But he's been Jack's trainer for.
So he's a physical. He's not a golf instructor. He's a physical.
No, he's okay. A physical trainer. But he's okay. Even as far as I can see, above that. But he has clinics. I think he has close to 30 clinics all over the world called the Egoscue Pain Centers. And
how do you spell Egoscue?
Egoscue.
Okay.
But anyway, I think it was Jack's second session with Pete, and Jack comes walking in there, and, you know, Pete had completely gotten Jack out of pain like he does most people. Hmm. And Jack said something, Jack asked him a question. He said, "Pete, why do I have this flying right elbow?" And Pete, who doesn't even play golf and had no experience in golf, said, "What's a flying right elbow?" And he said, "Well, my elbow, my backswing, when it flies like this, it lifts up. It doesn't fold and stay, you know, close to my side. It lifts up, and then I seem to come out of my shot. My heel comes up too high off the ground, and then it slams down too hard, and I'm prone to hit pull hooks." And Pete goes, "Well, you know, that makes sense." He said, "But you don't have a flying right elbow. You have a frozen rhomboid trap. Your scapula doesn't, you know, you're thick. People with thick chest up in here, like Jack had and still has, thick like that, don't have the range of motion in their shoulder blades, so Jack would lift up like that." He said, "Now Frederick's over here, he's a more rounded shoulder, you know, in those days, and he said, my elbow will come under my left arm." He said, "It's perfectly okay. That's how you're built, Jack, and that's how Roger's built. The whole thing is basically weight shift and rotation." So, you know, and those my wife at the time was a nutritionist, and Pete would always send all of his clients to her for nutrition. So then Terry, my ex, became, and we're still really great friends, she became Jack's nutritionist and for their family. And then so I got a really great relationship going with Jack ever since those days. Then periodically I'd run into him from time to time on the tour, and then I'd videotape his golf swing, and we'd look at him because he knew I understood the body. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so, and he wanted to know that. But back to that first, I got to share this. Back to that first, that session when Jack was, you know, asking Pete about his body, Jack looked at him and said, "Boy," he said, "you're telling me then, Pete, that I physically can't, it's not good for me to keep my right elbow in like that." And then Pete says, "Correct, because you're built differently." And Jack said, "Boy," he said, "you know, all these years I've been criticized for that. I used to put head covers underneath my left armpit. I'd put straps around my arms to keep more connected. And you're telling me that it doesn't matter." And Pete says, "That's correct." And I'll never forget this, because Jack looked at Pete and said, "Boy, this is really powerful stuff. We got to get this out there, and I can help you, Pete." And at that moment, right then, I knew where my career was going. And we had the biggest fish in the sea out propagating the golf fitness movement, and he helped us a lot for sure. So I have a really nice relationship with him and have for years.
Beautiful.
Arnold, I was on Golf Academy Live, when was this, 2003, I think. I was on there with Tommy Jacobs and John Jacobs, who had just won the senior 2003 Senior PGA Championship. And I was on, you know, national television explaining how the body functions in the golf swing. And some of Arnold Palmer's people saw that. And I was imitating what happens to so many seniors, you know, the rounded shoulder, forward head. And I guess, as the story goes, some of Arnold said, he was at the Tradition Golf Club. And some of the guys there said, Arnold, that's you, that's you. And then they turned to my friend and said, can this guy help Arnold? And then he said, I'll call him. So that's how Arnold and I got together. And then Arnold really bought into it. And I go down to Bay Hill all the time and spend a lot of time with them, or I beat them over in the desert. And then we did that infomercial together with Gary and Donna. And then, you know, it was great. But he's just, I learned a lot from him being in his kingdom, that's for sure.
Oh, I bet.
The way he treats people and being on the inside, the way he treats people is absolutely, it's nothing short of amazing.
It's legendary.
It is. He, you know, in an age where most celebrities are ducking the crowds and trying to get away, he's the opposite. He literally will go out of his way at Bay Hill or any place and walk over to strangers and buy him a drink or sit down with them. And because he knows, you know, he knows that when he does that, he's making those people happy, because those people are going to go home and say, wow, Arnold Palmer came over and bought me a drink and this and that. And he knows he's helping those people in a sense. And he loves it. I mean, he loves, like, you know, everybody loves Arnold. But I can tell you something. Arnold loves them, I think, even more. And I learned a lot from that about how to treat people. And he's an incredible guy, that's for sure.
Yeah, I had an opportunity in the early, mid-80s. I was doing some work around Major League Baseball, and I was in a conversation with who was a hero at the time, later become vilified, Mark McGwire. And Mark would talk about how he would sign autographs at the ballpark all day long until the last kid was done. But if he's sitting at dinner in a restaurant and with his family or friend or whatever, if he's at a restaurant and somebody walks up to him and asks for an autograph, he says, you know, I'm really sorry, but this is my private time. And if you catch me at the ballpark, no problem, but I'm not going to do that here. And he knows that people go, well, Mark McGwire's a jerk, man. Yeah. He would, you know. So you tell the story, Arnie just loves everybody at any time, and everyone walks away going, he is awesome.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah. I did a special show on the Golf Channel. It was Golf Academy Live. This was 2008, I think. And Arnold and I did that. It was all about, you know, the flexibility program I put him on. And anyway, the day before the show, I had to go down to the Golf Channel and kind of go over the script and the segments. There's always seven segments on that show. And I had to go over it with Jerry Foltz. And Jerry was the host of that show. And we sat down, and Jerry starts asking me all these questions about Arnold. And Jerry said something that I'll never forget. He said, you know something, Rod? He said, everybody I know has an Arnold Palmer story. And I went, wow, I never thought about that. And the thing is, I mean, every single, like you just mentioned, every time Arnold's name gets mentioned to me, or they ask me what he's like or all that, they'll go off without a story. Well, I was in a bar one time in Ames, Iowa, and it was a pro-am, and Arnold came in, and he came over. I mean, every single person almost has a story about him, about how well, you know, the king treated him. It's amazing. So,
well, I am one of those that still does not have an Arnie story, but I'm waiting.
Okay, well...
Someday.
I'll find out what the schedule is, and then you can go up to him. You can have one, too, for your resume.
Well, we'll talk about that later. And now, Gary Player must be a hero of yours as well, of all of us. But, I mean, for how old is he, in his 80s yet?
No, it's Gary, funny, because Gary and I have the same birthday.
Oh, do you really?
How I met him. I own the golf school, and I own the driving range over at Ka'anapali, Maui, between, 1995 and 2002.
Oh, I'm playing there next week.
Oh, really? Oh, you lucky dog.
Yeah.
Well, I forgot to tell you that my fee for this interview was a free trip over there with you.
Hey, listen, you're coming from, I got from Cali, from Oakland to Maui, $367 round trip. How can really? I not go?
Well, you got to go.
Yeah. I have a friend who lives there, and he belongs to Maui country. And so we'll get some interviews about that in the next couple of weeks. But yeah, I'm really fired up to go to Hawaii
so
to play
jealous.
Golf for 3 or 4 days.
This cold weather over here.
Oh, yeah, miserable. Yeah, here in California. Yeah. Anyway, so Gary.
Yeah, so I got, because my golf school and my video stuff was right in the middle of the driving range. So the first Kanapali seniors that they had the seniors there every year. And all the pros would start coming over to me and wanting me to film their swings. And then I started doing that. And then years went by and then I became, every year I would work with a lot of these guys, like I think over 70 of them. And one of the guys was Graham Marsh and Swampy. So anyhow, Graham had played with Gary. This is nowhere, 1997. And they had played, Gary played really bad. So after the round, they brought him over to me. And Graham said, hey, would you look at Gary? And I'm like, oh, my God. You know, Gary was really the first, great player that I really worked with. And so we sat down with him. And then we got into the fitness thing. And I explained some stuff to him. And then we went down. And then, it's been a wonderful relationship ever since. But we had the same birthday, both November 1st. And so we talked about that a lot. But Gary Player is without question the most inspirational human being I've ever been around. Mm. I mean, he's just so upbeat and positive. It's just contagious.
And in phenomenal shape.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he's incredible. He's a little bit forward with his shoulders, but he's... Yeah, I asked him what he does for his workout. And then he goes, oh, Roger, you see, he goes, every other day is my weight training day. It's I go lift the heavy iron and blah, blah, blah. And he gave me his whole schedule. But he does like, I think, what did he tell me? I don't remember now, but I think he does something like 275 push-ups every other day.
Oh, my God.
No, it's something crazy like that, like 500 sit-ups, lifts weights. I mean, he's phenomenal. But to me, I mean, all these guys that we're mentioning, I'm on a roll now, but all these guys, the one thing they all have in common, all of them, and they're all different, but the one thing they all have in common is how positive their outlooks are. I mean, they're all so focused and positive. It's amazing.
Well, that's a life lesson for you.
Yeah, all of them. I mean, no doubt about it.
Awesome. Oh, well, thank you so much for all that history, but that's not why we're here.
Okay.
We're here to talk to guys like the average golfer, like me. Like, you know, it's like I'm here with all this neato gear so I can ask questions of people like you. I've been following your, and everybody should follow your email, weekly, regular email blasts. And you had one a couple weeks ago which cracked me up, and I had to watch this. Moon over my hammies. I just love that. And that's just a stretching exercise. Why don't you walk us through that and what the benefits of our moon over my hammies are?
Okay. Number one, I have to give credit to that to Tom House. And Tom House,
the former pitcher?
Yeah, former pitcher.
And pitching coach.
Henry Aaron hit the 715th home run.
You beat House me to it.
He caught it.
He caught the home run that Henry Aaron hit to break Babe Ruth's record. He was the pitching coach at the time, or he was in the bullpen for the Dodgers.
That's right.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
But anyway, I think it was Atlanta.
Mm-hmm.
But regardless. But we're both on the TPI, the Titleist Performance Institute board. I've gotten to know Tom real well. But anyway, he's a great biomechanist and a great physical trainer. I mean, they're all going to him now. All the baseball pitchers and Peyton Manning, Aaron Rodgers. I mean, on and on. But anyway, I prefer whole body strength exercises and stretching exercises rather than just to isolate a certain muscle group. The whole body is one big working unit. But anyway, because as we've been talking about, so many of us are forward all the time. That simply means that our front sides get tighter and the back sides get weaker. Mm-hmm. But like the moon over my hammies, when we lie on your back, you know, in the, that's of my newsletter, you dig your heels in the ground and you pike up, and that really strengthens your entire posterior chains, your calves, hamstrings, glutes, lower back, upper back, shoulders. So it really helps balance out, you know, the sedentary lifestyle. And I, by the way, I have to give even more credit. Tom told me, because he came up with that, he stole that off of a Denny's, you know, Denny's restaurant, a Denny's menu. there's a ham and eggs special they have at Denny's, so on. That's where it came from. Moon over my hammies.
That's pretty good. That's pretty good. Well, now that Denny's has gotten credit, we don't have to worry about anybody coming after us. You know, the video that you did for that exercise, is that available on YouTube as well?
It is.
Yeah. Okay. So what I'm going to do in the show notes for today's program, I'm going to put the link to that so everyone can get a chance to see that. You can go and click on the link in the show notes. Absolutely.
I'm redoing my whole website, so it's going to be much more interactive where people can ask me questions. I'll interact with them. I'll be sending out more videos and newsletters a week. And so it should be up real soon.
Okay, great. Well, it's fredericksgolf.com. Fredericks is FREDERICKS, golf.com. Fredericksgolf.com. Right. People should check that out. All right. Well, this has been an amazing lesson. But your last newsletter is really what I would like to focus on for our free audience here today. That would be the 27-point plan that you learned from somebody. This was a fascinating story with some great advice as well.
Yeah. And I think if most people would do this, in fact, I don't think I know, their golf games would improve incredibly. But I'll make this real quick. When I was a kid growing up, one of the greatest players I've ever played with, and I mean this literally, and I think I've worked with over 70 tour players, 7 Hall of Famers. But honest to God, one of the greatest players I ever saw was a guy named Ted Richards. And nobody ever heard of him because he never turned pro. He was the 1953 U.S. Public Links champion. He won the Southern California Amateur a bunch of times. He won the Bel Air Club Championship, I think, 19 times. I mean, he was a great player. And what was so unique about him is that he never played. And, I mean, I'm not exaggerating. He would take 2 months off, 3 months off, and go out there and shoot 67, 68, 66. I mean, it was uncanny. And he always would beat me by a stroke. I mean, it didn't matter where we played. He'd always find a way to beat me. And I was playing pretty good then. And one day he beats me again, and we're sitting there in the grill room afterwards. I said, Ted, how in the world do you do it? How do you play such great golf and never play? And he said, because I have a great program. It's called the 27-point program. And I'm going like, what? What in the world is that? And he said, well, how many stances are there in a golf swing? I said, well, 3, open, square, close. How many ball positions are there? I said, well, basic, generally 3, forward, middle, back. How many golf swing paths are there? Well, 3, outside in, straight along, and inside out. He said, that's 3 cubed. So that's total. That's a 27 different types of shots that are possible generally. I said, correct. He said, start with position. He said, everybody would do this. Go out to the range, start in position 1, which he calls open stance, ball forward, outside in, swing path. What kind of shot are you going to hit? So, well, high slice. He said, correct. What happens if you put the ball, same thing, open stance, put the ball back in the middle of your stance, outside in swing? I said, it won't be as high of a slice. He said, correct. What happens if you put the ball way back, way outside in? You're going to hit a low, big fade or slice. He said, correct. He said, if a person would go and practice all positions, so finally you end up with a closed stance, you know, ball forward, inside out, swing path, you're going to be hitting a high hook, you know, ad infinitum. And he said, now the truth is, of the 27 possibilities of shots, the average person will probably only hit, maybe use maybe 5 or 6. He said, so a person should go out there and find their bread and butter. What are the shots that that's easiest for them to do? And go play that way. He said, now you go out in the course and you stand, you know, ask yourself, I mean, non-verbally or even verbally, ask yourself, okay, I'm on a dog leg right here. What kind of shot do I want to hit? Well, you want to get a medium fade. And he said, you do that, and he said, you will start playing golf rather than start playing swing. And he feels, and I've been on that lesson tee giving a lot of lessons for a lot of years, and it's amazing to me how many, it happens to me too, how many golfers don't even aim, don't even visualize. And, you know, and I started playing, and Ted and I would go out in the afternoons. I finally talked him into it. We'd go out every afternoon at the club in L.A., and he'd say, okay, Roger, what kind of shot you want to hit here? And I say, well, I got a big sweeping long par five, no trouble on the left. I want to hit a good hard hook. He goes, hit it. And I'll tell you, I mean, I played that summer, and I played probably the most consistent golf of my life. But like everybody else, you know, I start thinking about my swing and put my mind and my energy back there rather than out there. And they'll tell you, if the average person would do that, it sounds hard because the average, you know, the high handicapper, so many of them have a hard time even hitting, the ball solidly. But if they would start doing that, start visualizing the shot and executing it, it's amazing. You know, it's amazing how much they'll improve. And the smaller the target, and the more your energy is focused on the target, when you miss it, I mean, you'll still end up usually with a much better miss. I love that saying that, you know, if you shoot for the moon and you miss, you'll still land upon the stars. So you'll still have a pretty good, dispense at your...
Yeah, we had, I remember someone on the show years ago was talking about if you focus on a target, and you miss it by 10 yards, that's still a pretty good shot. But if you don't have a target that you're aiming at, if you're just looking out there and not even focused on where it goes, and you miss it by 10 yards, that's an awful shot.
That's right.
Yeah.
My old friend was one of the guys that owned the our first golf school. It's a guy named Ken Blanchard, Dr. Ken Blanchard, the one-minute manager.
Mm-hmm.
And he used to have a saying that I always loved. He said, if you don't know where you're going, any road will take you there. I was like that. But back to the thing, I was talking about all the positive attitudes that great champions and players and business people have. Right. All successful people, for that matter. They're thinking, the way they see things is different. But every great player, and trust me, I've been inside their heads, every great player, with no exception, all of them, they see things differently. They're so focused on the target. And they all do it different. But they're all so focused on the target, their visualization is dramatic. Arnold told me the first time I worked with him that the only thing that he tried to do in his golf swing was with his right hand feel like he's shaking hands and touching the target. Because, you know, he convexed his wrist and really cleared deep. And he was almost shaking hands with the target with his right hand. I mean, I've been at Nicklaus's house when he explained how he plays the Masters, which is phenomenal. I mean, he talks about, you know, looking at the trees, see where the wind's blowing in the trees and the ripples down in the pond, and where's the flagstick on 11, and what's the flagstick doing over on 12. And he said, guys, it's almost like I'm in a fairyland. It's almost like I'm in this imaginary world. And I just kind of feel my way along, seeing, you know, the targets and the shape of the shots with the wind. But honestly, Godfrey, they're all like that. I mean, they all see it different. And again, you know, we're talking about the average high handicapper just stands up there and hits it out there somewhere and hopes that it ends up good.
Well, the mid to high handicapper who has just heard your description about the 27-point program shouldn't just go out and start doing that. I mean, these are shots that you have to practice. And I would think for shots for people who are comfortable with their swing and not tinkering all the time too.
Yeah, right.
And well, most high handicappers and mid to high handicappers are constantly tweaking and trying to adjust their swing, even during a round, thinking they know what they did wrong in the last swing, as opposed to just try to get the same swing, every single time out, be consistent with the swing. They keep tweaking and thinking, oh, well, the ball went right that time, so this time I'm going to have to do this. Or last time I played this hole, the ball went in the water, so I'm going to have to do a different kind of shot. And they don't know how because they don't practice that shot.
That's right. That's right. But if they go to the driving range, and that's what Ted told me to do, and I was already a good player when he told me. But he says, go to the driving range and just start carving it out. And the thing is, even for high handicappers, believe it or not, it's not that hard. It's not that hard to do. To me, what's hard is you're trying to perfect a golf swing. And, you know, frankly, like I was saying earlier, the average guy who's really has no flexibility, no leg strength, or no, you know, hand-eye coordination, you know, they're going to have a hard, they can't do most, a lot of them can't do the things that their instructor is trying to teach them to do. They can't physically do it. But what happens is when they visualize a shot, believe it or not, you know, you can, your body will obey your mind rather than try to get your mind to obey your body, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
It's like the old Buddha, you know. The Buddha used to say, all we are is a sum total of our thoughts. That's mm-hmm. all we are.
Mm-hmm.
So if we can think differently, we can change our behavior, and we change our behavior physically, then, you know, we start changing our outcome, our destiny.
Interesting. But when you're going out and practicing this 27-point program, you shouldn't try to do all 27.
No.
Well, you should just focus on a couple each time you go out and feel comfortable with it before you start taking it out to the golf course.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah.
And obviously, the better play, that's a good point. But I think most people should just, you know, start with position one and start hitting some really high slices until you have that down.
Right.
And it won't take long. Then, like you said, move back. Then go real slow. A good player can go a little bit faster because they pretty much know how to hit these shots anyway.
Right. Yeah, but most of us don't.
Yeah.
Yeah, most of us don't even know how to, don't understand shot selection, I think. You know, it's like you see him talk about it on the tour, you see him talk about it on TV and instructors, but when it comes right down to it, you know, and then you go, even if you do practice it at a driving range on a mat, then you get out on the golf course and all of a sudden the ball is 6 inches above your, you know, above your feet, and you've got to make this nice high slicing shot. And it's like, yeah, right, I practiced that, but not this way. That makes it very difficult.
The art of shot making is almost becoming a lost art.
Yeah.
And the equipment today is so good. You know, and you can look at the club faces now and the drivers. I mean, they're gigantic. You can miss it all over the club face and still hit decent shots. So, you know, but I love watching guys like Bubba Watson, guys who are still shot makers, who still, you know, try to work the ball almost every time.
Mm-hmm.
Rather than just these guys who are just like robots and just drill it dead straight every time.
Yeah, and but he hits it far. He hits it far. So, Roger, I'm going to make a couple of announcements, and then when we come back, I'd love to get one quick fitness tip from you, flexibility tip that you can give all of us. Can we do that?
Sure.
Oh, what a kind gentleman. First of all, I want to give a huge shout out and thank you to Golf Smarter listener Joe Beyer. Oop, there, he just fell down. Joe, get up. I surprised him. He created our new theme music. Joe's a rockin' guitar player based in Minnesota and a fun guy to play golf with. He came out to California. We played, and he was so generous of his time, and he redid the Golf Smarter theme and just rocked it out. So please check out his website at joebeyer.com. Beyer is Beier. And hear more of his stuff, and please purchase his CD. Kid needs some help. This episode of the Golf Smarter podcast is brought to you by Harry's, for guys like us who want a great shave at a fraction of what we're paying now. Now, we've not heard from my nephew Andy, co-founder of Harry's, in a while. So, actually, before we hear his invitation for a discount to every Golf Smarter listener, did you know that Jeff, the co-founder with Andy, also co-founded Warby Parker? So this guy knows how to disrupt ancient industries, and the two of them have clearly made an impact on the blade industry with Harry's.
Hi, this is Andy Katz Mayfield, co-founder of Harry's. My partner Jeff and I started Harry's because we believe that for guys like us who want a great shave for a fraction of what we're paying now, there has to be an alternative. I invite you to go to harrys.com and see how much money we can save you each year on blades alone. I'd also like to offer you $5 off your first purchase by entering the code GOLFSMARTER when you check out. We've selected Golf Smarter because we believe that Fred has grown an active, loyal community of guys just like us. So please go to harrys.com, that's HARRYS.com, and make sure to enter the code GOLFSMARTER, one word, and get $5 off your first purchase. You won't believe the savings and you won't believe your shave.
Now, I may never have mentioned that Harry's gives 1% of their sales and at least 1% of their time to organizations that prepare people for personal and professional success. They are good people and have a great product. Again, to take advantage of our $5 discount offer on your first purchase, and I highly recommend that you get the Winston kit, use the checkout code GOLFSMARTER at harrys.com. H-A-R-R-Y-S, harrys.com. I'll actually be seeing Andy next month, so hopefully we'll get him in here to get an update on what's been going on with the company and maybe some new copy. Have you downloaded the new free Golf Smarter app yet? It's now available for your iPhone or iPad in the Apple App Store as Golf Smarter App. You have to look for the Golf Smarter app, two P's. There's also an Android version you can download at either the Google Play Store or Amazon.com. And, you know, you can become, and I request that you become, a Golf Smarter ambassador by leaving a review on the app and on the podcast in iTunes. It really helps other people decide what to do when they're checking things out. I know that for me, reviews are huge for when I'm thinking of downloading something new. So please, an honest review in iTunes would be of great help. Now, Roger, thank you so much for waiting.
Okay.
To close off this episode, can you give us a tip on how to increase our flexibility?
Okay. It's hard to do sitting down, but everybody, I mean, the overwhelming majority that people who stretch don't get flexible. And I start most of my seminars on saying, if you don't want to get flexible, if you don't want to improve your range of motion, if you want to stay stiff, then just get on a stretching program. And that usually gets their attention. But it's really true, because if I'm going like that, I'm really trying to stretch there. What am I doing? I'm holding my breath. And all flexibility is relaxing the muscle, and that comes from breathing. So if I breathe like, you ever been in your car and you drop your keys and you're grinding to try to reach over there and get it and you can't, but if you let go, you can actually, you know, go another, who knows, 8 inches, a foot longer. So breathing is what gets you flexible, not stretching. And the reason most people don't breathe is because they don't, there's a lot of reasons for that, but one is because they breathe from up here. It's like they breathe from up here in their lungs, and the breathing has to come from your lower diaphragm. So I tell people to get fat. So if you can, I'm going to try to stand up here. If you get somebody to put their fingertips right on your love handles, or even tie a belt or something around your abdomen here. And when you watch, when I inhale now, watch what happens. And I do this all the time in front of my audiences. I say, okay, everybody stand up, grab a partner, and have the partner behind you put their hands beyond their on the love handles of the person there, and take a two-thirds deeper inhalation with their nose. There you go. Here's what I see. They breathe with their traps. So again, I encourage everybody, and as simple as this sounds, I can't tell you how dramatic it is. If people would start to learn to breathe from their lower diaphragm down in here, so when you inhale, it goes out. When you exhale, it comes in. And when people get on a stretching program, they should not try to stretch. They should breathe into the stretch, or as we say, relax into stretch. And if they would do that, they will increase their range of motion dramatically, not to mention that they will start getting oxygen up into their head. It permeates throughout the body, and their body then starts to breathe properly. And guess what? When they breathe properly, and they're breathing from the lower diaphragm, they get back into perfect posture with the shoulders over the hips, over the knees, over the feet, straight ahead. So as simple as it may sound, breathe. And breathe from the diaphragm in here and practice that. You know, most guys try to look cool down there at Muscle Beach, you know, and we tuck it in. And that's exactly what you don't want to do. So breathing is the key. I have a lot of videos and tips on my website that teach people how to breathe. So that's the best thing I can teach people what to do is breathe, baby.
That's awesome. And, you know, it's true because, like, when you're talking about leaning down and reaching to pick something up, most people, or even stretching, they're going to hold their breath as opposed to breathe through it.
Right.
They'll, like, go, and then they'll try to reach over. And it's like, that's the worst thing you can possibly do, right?
You see that in golf, too. I mean, that's one of the biggest...
People take a big breath and hold their breath.
Yeah. I get people in their setup. I said, okay, and when they're addressing the ball, like here... I'll go put my hand right on their belly button. I say, okay, now right before you take it back, just let go. Just let it out. Just relax. You watch a free throw shooter. What does he do? You know, or the tennis player, they bounce it. I mean, almost every baseball pitcher, almost every sport, they will automatically, intuitively exhale gently right before they start it back. And most golfers are... You know, they suck it in and tense up. So golf swing will not allow tension, or for life for that matter.